This is the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. It's episode 275, and guess what? It's back to the normal routine. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the NFL wire site from the USA Today Sports Media Group. Seth Cox is back. He joins us again after a short hiatus. It's not his fault. I had other interviews set up over the last 3 weeks. Seth Cox from AvengeOfTheBirds.com is back as he normally is, and we have a full slate to talk about. Since the last 3 weeks, we haven't actually talked about the Cardinals. In episodes 272, 273, 274, I interviewed different writers from each of the different wire sites of the teams that the Cardinals will be playing this season, and previewed those teams. That there were some fantastic interviews. I had a blast doing it, and I've heard great things from listeners about the quality of those shows. But we are back, Seth. We're in the middle of training camp, and things are actually happening now.
Yeah, I mean, we're learning some things. The Cardinals under Cliff Kingsbury, I mean, and for the most part under Bruce Arians, this is just kind of who they are as an organization. They're very quiet. They don't allow as much media coverage. They don't allow as much information flow to come out. But we are getting some information. We're getting some feedback on kind of what is going on right now. I think a lot of it is calculated, if you will, to make sure that you're hearing the highlights of the right players right now. But I also think the fact, and I talked to some people I know that are there quite a bit, that the good things that you're not hearing are about guys that everybody actually cares about. So I'll say, you know, Isaiah Simmons, Kyler Murray, I've heard a lot of positive notes about those guys, and those aren't the guys that we're, you know, coming through the media are getting the quotes about every day. So I think, you know, I think it's been a really good combination of both of those type of things, and we're getting, you know, we're bleeding out information slowly, but that seems to be kind of Cliff's MO in his short tenure here.
Absolutely. And this training camp is different in the fact that it is not open to the public. And the Cardinals, unlike a couple other teams, are choosing not to stream practice, which basically means it's being treated kind of like regular season. Media members are able to attend, but the vast majority is considered off the record. I myself have managed to be, because of my day job, I can't always go down there, but I have been at one practice, and I did see a few things, nothing I can report on. But, you know, you can see some of the insight that I pick up through the media availability, which those interviews end up being public because they're published on the team site and on YouTube. But just some of the insight that you get from in like roster predictions and things like that, just kind of outside of who's participating, who's not. We can't talk about who's running first team, who's second first, so who's doing second team. That's prohibited pretty much across the league this year in training camp. So it's not nearly as much information as we would like, but it is information, and it's definitely more than we're getting in the virtual offseason. And in this show, we actually have some news that hit on Tuesday, so we're not even very late on it. Buda Baker with his huge contract extension, we're going to talk about that and its implications about the team. We're also going to look at some of the injuries, some of that have come up, Max Williams, Kenyon Drake in particular, and what it means. Should we be worried? The cornerback situation is, as since the last time, well, since one of the major injuries that has happened is that Robert Alford is lost for the season again, and the Cardinals have reshuffled and regrouped and seem to have addressed their cornerback position. The Dan Arnold buzz doesn't stop. We'll break that down and then talk about kind of the end, how rosters might be formed because of some crazy, not crazy, but the COVID rules for the practice squad this year. So we're going to break all of that down. Let's first start with Buda Baker. And I'll tell you that, you know, I was caught completely by surprise. I was at work and I happened to get pinged on Slack by my network of wire people. And that Buda Baker got a record-breaking deal, contract extension. He was the guy that we hadn't heard a single thing about contract talks. We knew, or at least had reported over the offseason, there had been talks with Patrick Peterson, at least initially. There had been some initial talks with Kenyon Drake. There had been talks with DeAndre Hopkins. One time, Buda Baker said he wasn't worried about the contract, but he's the one that gets the deal first. 4-year contract extension, $59 million, 33.1 guaranteed, and a $10 million signing bonus. He becomes, as of today, the, at least on a per-year basis, the highest paid safety in NFL history. What was your first reaction to the news when you heard that Tuesday morning?
I was a little surprised. Not that he's not worth the money or is not a talented player, but anytime you talk about highest paid at his position or a position, you know, you get into the kind of rankings of it all. And so with Buda, he's been a very good player. He's been a good safety, and he's scratched the surface of very good, but I mean, he hasn't been a consistent kind of all-pro type of safety. Remember, as his all-pro recognition his first year was as a special teamer, as was his, you know, kind of Pro Bowl nod his first year. And so, you know, his Pro Bowl nod this year was as a safety. He's, you know, he's really progressed as a player at the safety position, and he's kind of finding a niche in the Vance Joseph defense. All that being said, this is one of those contracts that you rarely see in the NFL. And the reason I say that is this: he's getting paid for what they believe he can do and become. The growth continue. Cause like I said, he's progressed quite a bit as a safety the last couple of years. But they're also getting out in front of what is going to be a cavalcade of massive safety contracts coming up. And by the people I talk to when it comes to kind of the contract numbers game, I tend to think that what the Cardinals paid for Buda Baker will actually look more top 7-ish in the next 2 years, and likely top 10 in the next 3, and not, you know, as long as he stays in the top 10, it's going to look like a good contract. If he bursts into the, you know, top 5 safeties or makes an all-pro team as a safety, you're going to be talking about, this is going to be, you know, maybe not a bargain, but based on what others are getting paid, the Jamal Adams, the Derwin James, the Justin Simmons, those guys, I think it's going to look incredibly smart on the part of Steve Keim and the Arizona Cardinals. So that's it. Like I said, that's rare, because typically you're paying guys for what they've produced already. And usually you're getting a guy when he's either right in his prime or kind of ending his prime, going to the backside of his career. It's rare to get a guy that hasn't really entered his prime yet. And I think most people would hope and agree with that he's not quite in his prime yet, and that he's trending that way, and it looks really strong for the team.
And that seems to be not only like within the organization. You look around the league and the way people talk about Buda, 2 years ago, it was just 2 years ago, and people in the organization were talking about Buddha as a potential star. He hadn't cracked that, but he got that Pro Bowl nod. So that's kind of the first thing that you need to do. You get your first Pro Bowl nod for your position, and then the recognition comes, and he's not even there yet. He's super productive in terms of tackles. He's all over the field. He's a really good enforcer, despite the slight frame. I mean, not slight, just the small. He's not small in frame. He's just short. And it's interesting because he's essentially, you know, when Tyrann Mathieu got paid, and then they drafted Buddha, you felt like, and this is kind of what I said on draft day, is that you drafted a thicker, faster Tyrann Mathieu. They don't have the same skill set, but it turns out that his versatility and his intensity is kind of the same thing that Tyrann brings, only a slightly different dynamic, and they're paying him on that, and he's been pretty durable. He hasn't had the major injury. He's had an ankle thing going, but I like the deal. I mean, it was a shock to me, but I think we can look at the Chandler Jones deal. This, to me, feels like the Chandler Jones contract. He's getting paid big, but guess what? That deal that Chandler Jones got is an absolute steal. And it was even kind of at the time, because he wasn't making as much as even the top pass rush contracts back in the day when they signed him in 2017. And this is kind of the thing with Buddha. Buddha, he gets the number one safety contract, but let's look at the Anthony Harris and Justin Simmons, who are playing at more than 11 million this year on the franchise tag. They see that, and they're probably, well, they're more maybe established safeties in terms of all around production, especially in the passing game. And then you look at Jamal Adams, and you look at Derwin James and Minka Fitzpatrick. Yeah, you're looking at in 2 years, he's probably going to be behind all of those guys in terms of average contract per year. And he's doing it. So he's 24 years old. By the time he's done, he will still have a couple of years left in his prime. So he can cash in one more time. But he won't even be 30 years old. I think he'll be hitting into his year 29 season, which will allow him to at least get one more pretty good, if not huge, contract, assuming he continues to ascend in the way that he has. And the difference is this time, and I can't wait to see how it's actually structured, if there are some of the protections that the Cardinals got in the Tyrann Mathieu deal. Granted, Tyrann had the major knee injury once, and they were banking on his return. Buddha hasn't had that. I'm excited to see what this means, although here's the part that's tricky. I think how it will end up working this year, unless they changed this year's salary, is that because he gets $10 million up front, so it's going to cause his cap hit to actually go up a little bit this year, which the Cardinals don't have a lot of cap space. They're sitting around $5 million. That's on the top four at 51. They've got to have something in mind for the cap moving forward. There are a couple of the contract extensions, maybe a restructure. Because looking at it, you wonder if they're going to be able to do anything with guys like, now, doing something with Kenyon Drake. I know he wants something long term. I don't know if the Cardinals want to do that long term, but if they did want to extend him a year, it would be easy to lower that cap number for what he's got this year. Patrick Peterson's another one. And he has said he doesn't want to have contract talks going into the season. But you have to think DeAndre Hopkins is coming up. Do you think that this deal is going to keep the Cardinals from doing other deals that they wanted to get done before the season?
No, I don't think so. I think, like you said, unless they put some money into this year somehow, and we haven't seen that on any of the contract websites, so, I mean, don't hold Jess and I to this if it comes back that they do. But we have not seen that they're going to do that on any of the contract websites yet. So, you know, I don't think it prohibits them from doing really anything. And, you know, there's something I want to talk about tonight, and something I'll write about sometime this week, is that they're in a 3-year window where they're going to have to pay guys – and do it kind of maybe even over the top, kind of extravagantly, because in three seasons we're expecting the Kyler contract to come in. We're expecting that to be in the $35 million range at this point. And depending on how, you know, the NFL responds post COVID from a financial standpoint, it could be over $40 million. But so they're going to have to spend the next three seasons and spend extravagantly. And that means, you know, locking up their key guys, whether that's includes Patrick Peterson is another discussion. But if they're going to do it, they might as well pay him kind of now as opposed to waiting for it. Same type of thing with – there. Obviously Hopkins is different because he's under contract still. But, you know, if they're going to extend him, they're going to want to extend him and probably get some of that guaranteed money in the next three seasons. As we kind of just talked about, it's going to be more about getting – things loaded into those 3 years and then giving yourself some room for the inevitable Murray extension.
It's going to be interesting to see what happens moving forward. You've got, in this case, it means you've got your high paid safety in the back end. Patrick's still their high paid corner. They've got Jordan Hicks, their big contract in the middle, Chandler Jones on the edge, Jordan Phillips, and they've kind of structured, if you kind of look at how teams are structured, you almost always see at every level, you usually see one guy that's high priced, and then you have to make that up with the other players around him. And I think they've done a good job of that overall, outside of cornerback, which we're going to discuss. But it does solidify the defense in terms of defensive core. You know who your core is. It's Buda Baker, it's Chandler Jones, it's Jordan Phillips, and then you need to see what Jordan Hicks, and then you need to see the young guys develop. Patrick Peterson might be a core, might be out of here after this season. Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. We're going to talk about some of the injuries. We're gonna pass on the quarterback injury because he's done for the year, but we're going to talk about some other ones. Kenyon Drake and Max Williams and anyone else that might come up. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We have there are two injuries that we know about. I mean, there's three. One is Robert Alford, done for the year. That's a separate discussion to talk about at cornerback because he's already on injured reserve. So his year is done. Now, two particular things. Max Williams, tight end, starting tight end. He has missed several practices. We don't know what it is. Cliff Kingsbury called it soreness and lingering stuff. Kenyon Drake was in a walking boot because he's got, as Cliff says, soreness. I've never heard of that, but how much should we worry about these injuries, do you think?
I mean, outside of the Alford injury, I don't think we worry until probably 2 weeks, I would say. If things are progressing to the point where Kenyon Drake is still in a walking boot or Max Williams is still struggling to get on the field in consecutive days, then I think then you start to get concerned. But right now, I think you're in a spot where it's not too big of an issue outside of, like I said, the Alford injury, where you can – you know, you think that you're going to continue to be all right. But again, with basically no access and no real ability to see what's going on, it's tough to judge. You know, you have to kind of go by Kenyon and Max and Cliff and what you're being fed. And, you know, as we talked about earlier, Cliff's not really the most open guy in the world about this stuff.
I will say it's one of the more frustrating. I get it. But when it comes to training camp, I've never understood the coaches just not to, like, Bruce Arians, for one. Now, Bruce did his share of lying about injuries. I'll bring us back all the way back to, what was it, 2014 or 2015. Darren College was out for a little bit, had a leg injury. BA says, we were lucky. Thank goodness it wasn't a fracture. 2 weeks later, we hear from DC that, in fact, it was a fracture. But he always was, well, the first thing he did when he addressed the media training camp before, after the walkthrough in the morning, he say, this guy sitting out, these guys are going to miss it. It's got a day off, blah, 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 blah. And it just, you know, for fans and for reporters, we like that sort of forthcoming information. He was never super specific about things, but if we go back to last year, Cliff, I will say last year, it felt like pulling teeth. Anytime anyone asked about availability, he got a little looser about it as time went on. But anytime he even brought it up, it looked like there was I have to answer this. But he's super evasive about it. We go back to like Andy Isabella last year. I think he ended up missing like 2 weeks with his knee injury, and he said, "Yeah, he'll be back. He'll be back soon. He'll be back soon. He'll be back soon." And so, you know, if we're looking at, obviously, whether it's the foot or the ankle, it's for Kenyon, it's serious enough that they want to stabilize things. However, since there's 3 weeks till the season, and he's not new to this system, this isn't a young player getting reps, I'm not terribly concerned. Max and Kenyon both are important pieces of the offense, but having the experience with it, it is more about them being ready for the season. And I will say that this is something that all NFL teams do, especially with their veterans, is they are overly cautious in camp so that they don't try to push through things. That injury that Kenyon has would probably limit him in practice, but he might play during the week. It might not be something that would keep him out of a game. He would get treatment, he would get rest. But right now, you know, you don't need him to get the game reps yet, and it gives you a chance to look at some of the other guys. You get more Chase Edmonds, you get some reps Reno Benjamin, you get a look at Jonathan Ward, their undrafted rookie, and maybe even DJ Foster, see if he has anything to offer on offense. Then you got at the tight end position, you get more Dan Arnold, and everyone's talking about Dan Arnold. You get some more Darrell Daniels, another player that Cliff Kingsbury has been pretty effusive with some praise. And then the other one, which your site caused quite a stir, is that DeAndre Hopkins' absence from practice. Hoo-wee! Did you expect that sort of firestorm when Walter wrote that piece, which was pure speculation and probably a fair question to ask? But that headline, oh my gosh, grabbed some eyeballs.
Yeah, it did. And you know, it's interesting because the only reason it really got picked up like that is because John McClain, the Houston Texans beat writer, definitely used it to stoke the flames of fans in Houston who are still very angry and bitter about the DeAndre Hopkins trade. And so I think it was a fair speculation, like you said. And I think the way that it was worded at times was probably too strong in the opinion. But at the same time, I think asking the question is like, hey, what's going on with this? Like, is it really a hamstring, or is this more of like a, hey, we don't want to potentially injure our, you know, new acquisition before we get something done? Because Everything we've heard is that they were going to get something done, that the Cardinals and Hopkins were going to get something done. And it seems now that, although the Buda Baker thing just got done, before the Baker thing, it just didn't seem like it was going to come to fruition right before the season at this point, if nothing's done yet. So we'll see what happens. But obviously he's back in practice. I think there is some slight concern, not about him holding out or anything like that, but I do think they're being cautious, overtly cautious with veterans and muscle tweaks and things of that nature at this point, because the last thing you want is to lose a player and for, you know, a couple of weeks to a muscle injury and then fall behind, or, you know, God forbid he get actually injured, you know, or seriously injure us, something that's a strain in this part of practice. And so that's what, you know, I just think they're being extra cautious right now with these veterans and the fact that this has not been a normal off season. So we know guys like DeAndre and Larry and Chandler Jones, and those guys are working on their craft all the time. But at the same time, you don't want to push those guys because, let's face it, they've done everything. You don't really need right. to push them.
Well, it's interesting. The comment that Cliff made, I think it was Sunday, he was very clear that he doesn't coach all players the same. He wants to maximize certain players. And so if Hopkins has a little bit of Allen Iverson to him at prop practice, I'm not saying that that's necessarily the case. There were the rumbling, I guess Albert Breer said that coming out of Houston is that he would take more practice time off than he should have. Now, it'll be interesting to see how things happen here. But Cliff is, you know, you coach guys differently. A guy like Hopkins and his production in the league, you don't have to ride his tail about getting on the practice field. BA was probably the same way. But if there's a young guy who's injured, BA, after about 4 days, was tired of him being hurt. he would make it quite public about guys on the training table instead of practice. But a guy like Hopkins, especially, this is the meaningless time of year. Get them healthy, especially with the odd off season. Be overly cautious so that their bodies are ready, and take advantage at the same time of the reps with the other players. Because as much as you say, hey, we need to get Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins some chemistry, let's be honest. Kyler's going to be a high-end quarterback, and Hopkins is a high-end receiver. It doesn't take much work for a good quarterback and a great receiver to connect. I mean, that's just silly.
No, it doesn't, and you're right. And that's the big thing, is just, you know, kind of focusing in on that and working. And as long as they're on the same page, that's all that matters. And so I think when it's all kind of said and done, it'll be all right. And, you know, right now, it just, as you said, it's just a lot of there's really nothing to talk about. So you have to talk about this small amount of information you can glean and then go from there.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Secret podcast, the best star of Cardinals talk on the way. We're going to move on and talk about the cornerback position. Is Robert Alford done for the season? They've added some players, and they might be in an okay spot now. That's coming up next on Rise Up Secret. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk about the quarterback position, because Robert Alford tore his pec. You feel for a guy who's worked really hard, a guy that the team was really high on in terms of a fit in their defense. But at the same time, you just shake your head at the sort of fortune that the Cardinals have with this sort of player. If you look at the last couple of years, now I'm not saying that Robert Alford was injury prone, but he was cut off a year after a year in which he struggled and dealt with a high ankle sprain pretty much all year. If you look at some of the other, Evan Mathis, a guy who was a guard who was oft injured in the last couple of years, they worked really hard to try and get him ready for this. He ended up on IR. They trade for a guy in Marcus Gilbert who played only a few games in the last previous 2 years. What does he do? Tears his ACL. They give him all sorts of days off during training camp, and then he tears his ACL before week one. Then they bring him back, and then this isn't an injury, but then he opts out of this season. You see, in Alford, he breaks his leg last year. He tears his pec this year. He's 30 years old, and it just feels like the Cardinals get snake bit by this sort of signing, where a guy that's on the starting to hit the back end where the body might start failing, and it does fail him over and over again. I felt bad for him in that sense, but his injury put the Cardinals in a really big bind. After all, Vance Joseph himself said, like, 4 days prior, that the health of our starting cornerbacks is critical to our success. We saw what happened when they were missing guys. But let's kind of look at this. So they bring in B.W. Webb, they bring in Ken Crawley, and then the icing on the cake is Drake Kirkpatrick. Could the Cardinals, what do you think? Do you think the Cardinals are in a better spot or a worse spot at the cornerback position than before Alford's injury?
You know, I go back and forth. If we had seen Alford play at all in the last 2 years, it might be different. But we at least know what Drake Kirkpatrick's going to give us. And that is solid, unspectacular play at the cornerback position. It's a guy that knows quite a bit about the Vance Joseph system. I just think it's a natural fit, and it just made the most sense with where they are at in the process, where, you know, the season is right now, and that is kind of what you're looking at. And so I think overall they're in a better position. I'm not going to say straight that Drake Kirkpatrick's going to be a better player than Alford would have been. I just think that he's a more known commodity at this juncture of things.
I like the move. I kind of see that laterally. But here's the thing. To get a lateral move at this point in the offseason is a win, because – now, and I will say that the Cardinals did have some options out there, and I wrote kind of some of the options that were available. Kirkpatrick was one of them. Aqib Talib, I thought, would have been a nice fit. Vance Joseph's coached him before. But however, the one thing I worry about is Kirkpatrick only played 6 games last season. He's at that 30-year mark, and while it's a good thing for now, you hope that he doesn't end up pulling an Alford and getting hurt down the line. In terms of he's a little longer than Alford. He's been a starter for a really long time. But I love the fact that they ended up going with a guy who could play outside. As much as I like Byron Murphy, we saw the struggles that he had playing outside, and they really, really like his upside inside. And I think he's capable of playing outside, but it would have been basically moving Byron outside and then putting a new guy in the slot, whether it's a B.W. Webb or one of the guys they already have on the roster. It would have felt like you were downgrading at 2 positions, potentially. While now, you keep Byron inside where they really like him, and he really – and I will say this – I remember when Tyrann Mathieu was a rookie, and I remember the next year when he came back. Byron Murphy, I'm not going to say he's going to be a defensive player of the year, but the way he carries himself this year, it's different. It reminds me of the confidence change that Mathieu had in year 2 when he suddenly was one of the best players in the NFL. Byron Murphy has that swagger about him, and he was confident last year, but he definitely talked like a rookie. He looks and carries himself like he belongs in the league, and I love that. So Drake Kirkpatrick is probably going to be as capable as Robert Alford. He's been really good for a long time. He's familiar with it. So I really, as long as he stays healthy, I really like it. And I think the additions, even guys like B.W. Webb and Ken Crawley, are probably upgrades over the guys that they have behind them in the lineup. It's probably better options than your Chris Jones or Jace Whitaker or Zane Lewis or even Kevin Peterson, that probably might be better options. And now, I don't know about Crawley. I bet Webb probably makes the team. And then it's going to come down to Crawley and like Chris Jones or Kevin Peterson or the like.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. I think you've got, you know, a lot of guys now that you can feel comfortable with the addition of Kirkpatrick. And what it allows you to do is keep Murph inside where he wants to be, where he's more comfortable, where it seems like they're more comfortable with him. But then you also have, like you said, all of a sudden you have some veteran guys in Webb and Crawley who have done it, who have been successful. So that's what it really comes down to, is just keep working and keep trying to get better. And I think it's a lot different this year to have those two guys, not including Kirkpatrick, but having Webb and Crowley in there, and not, if there are struggles for Murphy this year, not having to continue to run him back out there when he's getting his butt kicked, because it's worse behind him.
Right. Last year was just so, yeah. Last year was a disaster, and I'm actually super stoked to see what this defense can become. I'm not expecting a top 10 unit, top 5 unit, but at least have it be capable. I mean, last year with Suggs playing on the edge, he was mostly worthless. Hassan Reddick at inside backer was a mess. When you've got the mess of the cornerback position, when you're running out there, Tremaine Brock, Byron Murphy, and Chris Jones or Kevin Peterson. No one, like, and I looked back, it's like they had close to the worst pass defense in league history last year. I don't think that's going to be the case this year.
No, I would agree with that. And I think you've got improvement everywhere except the depth at the corner, or not corner, excuse me, the outside linebacker, pass rusher position. I think you feel comfortable with your depth along the down defensive line, and they may even offer some of that that push in the pass rush. I think you feel very comfortable with your inside linebacker or off-ball linebacker trio that you have. Obviously, we just hit on the DBs for the most part. I think you're very comfortable with those guys, at least the depth of it. And so the real question becomes who steps up as a pass rusher around those guys. But I think that's if your biggest concern is your third pass rusher, I think that's a better place to be in than you were last year.
Right. It's third pass rusher and maybe third safety. And then you're in a pretty good spot defense. So this is so much better. Yeah, coming up next on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk about the most hyped Cardinals player that hasn't accomplished a whole lot. That being Dan Arnold, the new shiny potential great tight end. That's coming up next on Rise of Sea Red. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. It's time to talk about this guy, Dan Arnold, a guy who flashed late last year, 6 catches, 2 touchdowns. But the way people are talking about him, they think Travis Kelce, Jimmy Graham, George Kittle all rolled up into one. I'm skeptical. I'm not saying he's a bad player. I'm just super skeptical. And we've both been, at best, questioning how impactful he might be in terms of production. But Peter Schrager on NFL Network, on Good Morning Football, is saying, hey, he's the next, he's the guy that you need to pick up in fantasy. He's going to have a prominent role in the Cardinals offense. Cliff Kingsbury clearly really likes him. They'll talk about that he can grow with Kyler. That's something promising. We've been burned too many times with the potential of a great tight end to have me get that excited about him. I don't know. Is it just the years of being of the Rob Housers and the Ricky Seals Jones and the Darren Fells coming in and looking like great, great players only to have them be meh?
I just think it's that, and not that we're smarter or anything of that nature. I just think it's the fact that we see this as We don't know where the numbers are going to come from. You and I kind of talked about this in our group text message, and we talked about if he's at 25 catches and, you know, like we said, six of those are touchdowns, I think that's a great season. I mean, that's a spectacular season, because from a pure volume standpoint, if you split up 250 catches between between DeAndre, Larry, and Christian, that only leaves maybe at best 100 catches for the rest of the team.
Roughly. Like I broke this down in an article. So Kyler had 349 completions last year. If he were to up that, now the league leader was Matt Ryan with 408. So let's say he gets to 370. I think it's reasonable. 370 completions. I had 240. You're saying 250. So if we do with 250, are going to go to the top trio. That's 120 left over for everyone else. They're going to get 60 catches out of their backfield. Last year they had 77. And then I said, I went with 240 for, I said 90 on the conservative side for D-Hop, 150 combined with Fitz and Kirk, 60 for the running backs. That takes you to 300. If you, like, your trio of receivers, okay, Trent Sherfield, Andy Isabella, Keyshawn Johnson, and that's saying if they combine for 40 catches among the three, which is not many at all, that leaves 30 for all the tight ends. And so I'm like...
Yeah, and he's technically not even their, like, top tight end.
Right, he's tight end two. I mean, he's going to be out there. He's going to get playing time, but I don't know if he's going to get significant playing time. So, like, if he has more than 30, 35 catches, I will be absolutely shocked that he will get that many passes. Now, the touchdown factor, if you're talking fantasy, he might be a very nice addition fantasy-wise. If he can get you 6 to 8 touchdowns, he can get you some really good value there. And I hate talking about fantasy football because I don't play fantasy football. But if you're talking total impact, I'm trying to think. Did the Saints really pass up on the next Jimmy Graham when they themselves had a Jimmy Graham for a lot of years and they let him go? I think he'll be good, and he's had some highlights. I mean, you've seen some of the pictures that they've come out of camp that the teams release. You saw the highlights last year. If there's one thing Dan Arnold can do, is he can go up and get the football. But I don't know. What can we get? What can we expect out of him?
I don't know, and that's why I said I just think setting expectations too high is just unrealistic right now. And that's why I said I think anything over 20 and 4 is a great season for a tight end in this offense, and not because they're not going to utilize the tight ends, but as we've kind of explained, I just don't see where the touches are coming from to get that much more. And I think you said it was John Gamadora said plus 35.
Oh, geez.
And so you might say, well, that's only 10 more than what you said, Seth. 25 and 6 being like a spectacular season. And I don't think people understand from a touch standpoint that I just don't see how 10 additional catches or targets are even available. That's my whole thing. Like,
right. You've got where you have to get the ball to Hopkins, you have to get the ball to Fitz, you have to get the ball to Kirk, and you got to get the ball to Kenyon.
Exactly. And so I just don't know where this is all going to come from. So I just that's what's tough for me. I don't see it.
And there's the thing. We're not hating on Dan Arnold. We just don't.
Not at all.
We believe he's a talented, like Ricky Seals-Jones was talented, Rob Hauser was talented. But when you have a tight end in offenses that don't feature the tight end, and I will say, like, I did defend Cliff Kingsbury in this. If you go back to his first season at Texas Tech, Jason Morrow was by far their best receiver at tight end. Had over 100 catches, one of the top pass catchers of the entire nation. But at the same time, it was first season with a bunch of players that he didn't recruit, and he didn't really have the receivers. By the end of his time at Texas Tech, he barely even had a tight end on the roster. You have to have tight ends in the NFL. That 11 personnel is probably going to be their base. I talked about it leading into last year. That was probably going to be their most common personnel because it gives you the most flexibility in terms of run pass. And then you run across, because Cliff loves 10 personnel, but then he's got to love Arnold enough to make him one of those quote unquote receivers, as opposed to bringing out a guy like, you know, Andy Isabella with his 4.3 speed. I mean, it leaves him with interesting choices.
Yeah. And it's tough to find where that's coming from and how they're going to get those touches to those, you know, additional touches to players. And I just don't see it. So we'll see how it kind of works out. But for now, I think expecting less is probably safer and more fair for the player.
Right. Coming up next on the Rise FC Red Podcast, the best of our Cardinals talk on the web, we're going to talk a little bit about some interesting new rules. I mean, maybe you've heard of them, but as we get closer to roster cuts, what the practice squad is going to look like and how that could shape the decisions that the Cardinals make when they go to cut down to 53. That's coming up next on Rise FC Red. We're back on the Rise FC Red Podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. The practice squad is different this year. Yes, the Cardinals and all the NFL teams are going to have to take their roster down from 80 players to 53. So they're going to cut 27 players here coming up in a couple of weeks. However, the practice squad this year will be 16 players, six of whom can have unlimited time accrual. Previously, you could have up to 10 and was going to be up to 12. But you were the type of player who was allowed to be on the practice squad. He couldn't have more than two accrued seasons in the NFL. And so he was a developmental young player. But this year, COVID rules, basically you've got six players who could be a 10-year vet on your practice squad. So you've got 16 slots, six who can have unlimited experience, and then each week you're able to protect four players on your roster from getting poached, which is an interesting thing to do. Which means in the end, you're going to cut 27, re-sign 16. You're going to end up with 69 players. It's almost like you don't need to make cuts. Almost. Now, obviously, you've got to go through waivers and bring things back. But I get the feeling that there might not be many waiver claims, especially on young players that you haven't seen them do anything in the preseason.
Right, and I think that's kind of the big thing that we skipped to wait to talk about here with some of these signings, the B.W. Webbs and the King Crawley signings, is that with this unlimited accrual situation, you've got the ability to get veterans in, and if they do pass through, bring them on as practice squad guys. And so you load up the position, say slot corner, and if a guy like Drake or Patrick, who hasn't had great health the last couple of seasons, continues to have issues staying healthy, you've got guys locked and loaded already on the roster as practice squad guys. And it just makes it a little bit easier.
It's going to be interesting. The one thing about the whole veteran thing that I find might be interesting is the fact that as veterans, are there going to be some guys who will choose not to the practice squad with the hopes of signing elsewhere. That's the one thing that's the interesting dynamic, because a practice squad guy makes, you know, what, 110,000?
Yeah.
110,000 over the course of the year, while the league minimum for a veteran, you know, after once you hit 7 years, the minimum is $1.05 million. Now, you could say, well, 110,000 is better than nothing, right? But if you sign to the practice squad and the Cardinals then designate you as a guy that can't be poached, it does limit the availability of that player to make more money, which is interesting.
Correct. And that's, you know, kind of what you're looking at now. And I think that's the reason we're seeing the huge amount of kind of veterans getting signed like this and getting worked out so much, is that that's probably, and this is just speculation, so nobody take it, you know, as gospel, but we're probably seeing teams come in and that's how they're presenting this opportunity, is like, hey, you're going to have an opportunity to compete, but with, you know, with limited training camp and no preseason, you're not going to get the exposure you're looking for. So let's, you know, would you be willing to take a practice squad contract if it comes up?
Yeah, that makes sense. Now, some interesting decisions the Cardinals could make is with an expanded practice squad, the guy like Chris Streveler, their CFL quarterback guy, they've got him working on special teams in training camp, which suggests that they probably would keep him on the 53-man roster. But at the same time, that he would be the perfect player to keep on, especially since everyone thinks that they're going to use him like Taysom Hill as a receiver, as a tight end, as a quarterback, as a running back, as a special teams guy. Cliff Kingsbury, unless he's blowing smoke, which he does, he said he's definitely a quarterback. Like, I don't think he wants to use him as a gadget guy. I think he wants him to be the backup quarterback in 2021. But do you burn a roster spot, or do you use a practice squad guy? And then it's kind of interesting with him. Ryan Winslow is an interesting case. Their backup punter. I think he's a guy they're going to keep on the practice squad, because I think they're grooming him kind of like how they did Zane Gonzalez late in 2018 to become the kicker the next year. Andy Lee's in the last year of his deal. He's old. And Ryan Winslow spent time with the team last year in training camp. He was on the practice squad some last year. And I think they're keeping him around the whole year, and they'll probably try and protect him in some ways. Basically saying, you're going to be our punter in a year from now. And it gives him some reps, like, as a holder. And it also, like, guys like Joshua Miles, who's one of their picks last year, he's probably on the bubble at best on the 53-man roster, or Hakeem Butler. There's some interesting guys that they'll be able to keep around, but not have to keep them on the roster.
Right. And I think the other thing is, and Walter wrote about this, I think the need to keep a emergency punter and kicker on the practice squad has never been higher because of the COVID situation, where injuries happen and you can deal with those, but if a test comes back on a Friday, then you got to get somebody in there. And in keeping a guy like Winslow, bring in another kicker, you know, potentially to just be on the practice squad. And then the same thing, because they're making, wasn't there another exception about quarterbacks with the practice squad?
I don't know if there was an exception about quarterback. But I know what's different this year is that, you know, they used to have an emergency quarterback on the game day rosters for active day. They'll have an emergency O-lineman, so they'll be able to have an eighth. Like, the Cardinals own, like, Bruce Arians talked about keeping 7 offensive linemen active on game day. Cliff Kingsbury only ever kept 7 guys active, but now they'll have an emergency lineman. I don't recall anything right about quarterbacks, though.
So, I mean, the whole thing becomes, how do you... you know, how do you get Streveler to the practice squad if you want to do that? And so, you know, we'll see what happens and how it works out. But I would be surprised just due to the fact that they paid him, right?
Well, there was an initial report that he got, what, like 100,000 guaranteed. That came out from that first report. But I haven't seen anything on any contract site, like nothing from Over the Cap and nothing for SpotTrack says that he has any guaranteed money. So I don't know for sure if he got that 100,000 guaranteed. Because when they gave him, when the initial report came out from that guy that from Canada, that reporter, you thought, well, he's making the roster. Because it would be stupid to pay a guy $100,000 to just cut him.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like Kevin White last year and Michael Crabtree and all the stupid moves they've done in the past. And why would you do that for a CFL quarterback?
Right, exactly.
All right, well, let's wrap this up. We're actually keeping it under an hour. So this is actually the best hour of Cardinals talk of the way. The best hour and a half. But we'll wrap up this edition of the show 275, and we should be back next week. We'll probably talk about some more training camp news. Well, look, we might be, in fact, actually, next week we'll probably do our 53-man picks because I believe roster cuts will be next weekend. Huh, that's going to be fun. So we can make our roster predictions next week, and then we start preparing for the regular season. It's going to be fantastic. We'll have a season preview. And we're basically going shows every week. I know some people have been saying, hey, I wish you did more shows. We're now at the time of year where we're doing shows every single week until pretty much after the end of the season. So on behalf of the Rise of the Sea Red podcast, that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening. We'll be back again next week. And go Cardinals. Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, rise up, Sea Red. Whoa!